The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion. Kia ora and welcome back to the show. Today we're joined by award-winning children's book author Mark Somerset. Mark, could you start by introducing yourself and sharing about how you first found your way into the world of writing picture books?
G'day, Rich. Thanks for having me on the show. So I guess it started a long time ago. I was writing little kids' books and stuff, or short stories, certainly, when I was really young, 10 or 11 years old. Sort of set that aside through school and career as I was driven into that world of maths and all those things that are not quite so interesting. And back into my imagination on my 17, started writing mostly songs and stuff, really. I got really into musicianship and writing music, and then in my late 20s it was, I actually wrote a short story that just kind of channeled down through me about a little boy wanting to cross a river to get to a beautiful cherry tree. And it was all about sort of dreams, and it was a really powerful experience, about following your heart or being brave and all that. And it just really spoke to me, it really resonated in me, and I just thought it was such an awesome experience. And I got to thinking, I wonder if I could turn that story into a picture book. So that was really the start of it. And I met someone who ended up illustrating that book, and it wasn't the first book we published, but that's kind of how I found my way into that world. And I just loved the idea of creating shorter stories, very concise, to share with people that hopefully had a bit of a message or a bit of a laugh in them.
So what was the spark that made you want to write Cork on the Ocean, and how did you make that come to life?
Yeah, well, that obviously turned out to be my first book. So I was actually sailing from the Rorty Islands with Rowan, who illustrated the book, to Tana in Vanuatu, and we got caught in a big storm and I got really seasick. And we got actually blown off course. We were at sea for 62 hours. We were only supposed to be sort of a 27-hour crossing or something. And I was just thinking to myself, just be like a cork, you know, go with the flow, you know. Don't worry about where the next wave's coming from and stuff, because, I mean, I was really seasick. And that kind of metaphor started to just loop around in my head about life as, like, we're all like corks on the ocean. I think that was a phrase popularized by one of the guys out of that... was it the Beach Boys, I think, might have had a song called Cork on the Ocean. But I hadn't heard that, but it just sort of resonated, and I started to think about that. And by the time we sort of got to land, I had a couple of short stanzas about being trapped in storms and what it is to be free of them, or to get yourself out of them. And it turned into a book. And it's just a little I guess, metaphor, a little meditation on life about being courageous and kind and sort of and braving the storms, so to speak.
And how long did you know before you were going to write the second book for that?
Gosh, it's a long time ago now. I mean, the book Cork on the Ocean was published in 2006, so I guess it's 19 years ago. I think within the first probably year or so of Cork coming out, I had lots of ideas about, you know, a sequel. I mean, there's no big spoiler alert at the end of that book about a bottle washes up on the beach in Cork on the Ocean. They look at each other and they think they recognise each other, and they decide to have a journey together. So whereas the first book's much more about a hero's journey, you know, sort of being courageous, kind, living as an individual in life, or, you know, sort of like the case of Joseph Campbell, go out and, you know, pursue the journey of whatever your heart is that you want. You know, as an individual, the sequel is much more the concept of sort of relationship and two people travelling together. And and I just felt like I wanted to write that, you know.
Nice.
So to explore that. And I think as the years have gone by, I look back on those stories now, and I used to think that I was writing picture books for children, but I think honestly I realised that they were just processes that I was going through to understand more deeply the human condition about individuality or love, relationship, romance, you know, all that sort of stuff, but fortunately done in a way that was relatable to sort of children as well.
Yeah. And what did it feel like when you first held that book in your hands?
I can't really remember that. I would say I can remember receiving 5,000 hardcover books and thinking, okay, now I've got to start selling these things. So that's always an anxious moment. We had them piled up in a little room first up, and when I was living up in the Kaiwi Lakes, where I wrote that story, And you know, getting them into market and selling them. So, I really don't remember the feeling of that. I think maybe this idea of like, okay, I've got this now. Now I'm just one step into the process, you know. So I probably went straight into the kind of the sort of like, okay, I've got to get this, got to get these out and start letting people know about them and figuring out that whole distribution and marketing. Because as you know, we did it all ourselves in the early days. So it was a process, but we managed to get through those first 5,000 books in the first, I think it was about just under 2 years. So that was a decent start, and it gave us the encouragement to go on and do what we went on to do.
And from then to now, you've just released the new book, Because You Were You. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So that was actually, that's a little story about a little mouse with big dreams and a very unconditionally loving mother. That book actually was seeded 15 years ago as well, and that was actually in response to, because probably our best known book, Baa Baa Smart Sheep, my best known book, Baa Baa Smart Sheep, was published 15 years ago, and we went to present it to the publishers at Random House, who just Cork in the Bottle, sequel to Cork on the Ocean, and they loved it, thought it was really funny, but just were a little unsure about the subversive humour in it. We weren't quite sure whether it was going to be, how it would be swallowed by the general public, I suppose you'd say. And that just encouraged us to do it ourselves, which has worked out really good for us in the end, because Baa Baa obviously went on and did well for us and kind of broke us a little bit. But at the time, I can remember driving away from that meeting and thinking, well, if that's a little edgy, what's a story that I could do that would be maybe, you know, without pandering too much to the requirements of a publishing house, what might tick some more of the boxes? And I had been thinking about an antidote to the mischievous Baa Baa. This little mouse was scampered into my mind, a really creative individual that's looking to live a big life full of possibility, but maybe has doubts and is unsure a little bit about what that might look like if it wasn't to come to pass. That was seeded there. So that story is really all about that. It's about individuality, about the unconditional love of a parent and how important it is. It's kind of a reminder, parents, to remember that in this busy life that we all live, to remember how precious our children's imaginations are and to love and nurture them as best we can. That's really what that's about.
You managed to balance writing books that both children love and adults really enjoy reading over and over again, speaking from experience. How do you work to balance that?
I guess it's just a fortunate. It's kind of, so it's like a fortunate accident or whatever. I mean, I guess I've learned what constitutes the format of an accessible children's book for both, for the child. You know, there's all these rules. You know, they should be 32 pages long, including ends and stuff, and that they should be under 500 words. And I've never really written to any prescription, but certainly as I've got on in my career a little bit, I've realised that, you know, trying to say it succinctly as possible in a way that can be relatable to parents and children, adults and children, is I just love doing it. I'd love to try and craft something to get to the point that maybe creates an underlying layer, like, you know, the Shrek movies, or, you know, it's going back a bit, but, you know, that there's nuances and that adults can pick up more of the story. Much like a good picture book, I suppose. You know, a picture book should have its narrative, which is going to entertain, but the pictures should tell a whole lot more. And I guess that's what I hope to do with it. At first, they appear like picture books, children's books, but with adults, there's often deeper layers and meanings to enjoy, or just a sense of humour that will hopefully, yes, span a wide range of ages.
Yeah. And what does your creative process look like now? Are you very disciplined about your writing routine, or do you have sort of bursts of inspiration and follow those?
Yeah, I'm completely ill-disciplined. I don't have any discipline at all. I probably, being picture books, you know, they take, there's not a lot of words in picture books. In fact, my latest book, which I've just signed to Scholastic, that'll come out next year, called Slow Mo, is only 90 words long. And that's really kind of largely in the pictures. So I spend really very little time writing, but I do spend an inordinate amount of time in my imagination, just thinking storylines and plots and playing with characters and ideas and gags or tweaking this and that. So I'm often lost in that space. But the actual writing process you know, I might sit at the computer and do 5 or 10 minutes and just go, that's good, and I'll walk away and make a cup of tea or whatever and come back. And so the actual writing of the story is very, very short often, but the editorial process is another mm-hmm. beast, and I can spend hours and hours and hours in front of my computer moving words around, trying to get the rhythm and cadence right, you know, trying to get the metaphor or whatever it is that I'm trying to include in that story, and just trying to boil it right down to its essence as much as possible without any extraneous sort of language. So so that's kind of how that rolls for me. No get up at 5 for me and write 3,000 words or anything like that, you know. Maybe that's why I haven't written a novel. I'm really interested. I've got a number of novel ideas, and I never quite, maybe I lack the discipline, which is just a whole different genre, right? So that's for me to maybe explore in the coming few years.
And how do you approach finding an illustrator for your work? You know, what makes a collaboration click for that?
Well, obviously in the past, Rowan, my ex-partner now, we created the book together. The first one, what we think, was it six books together, and that was really, really fun. But she actually decided that illustration was taking too much of her time, and you know, she wasn't what you call a natural artist, a fantastic graphic designer. Mm. But she actually taught herself to draw, because when we first got together to talk about picture books, she wasn't freehand drawing. She was thinking about employing other people and designing the artwork, and I think that's how we met you, Rich, wasn't it, actually? So, you know, but eventually we went away and she came up with this absolutely wonderful style, and that served our book so beautifully for the first, like, six books I published, I think, we published together. But she's not doing that anymore. And so I met a lady called Dean for the Because You're You book. She's an artist who lives in Glenorchy, and she approached me, actually, a little market stall I had one day, and we got chatting, and she was really cool. And created started working together, and she just produced some beautiful artwork for that story, and I loved it. So we just rolled into that, and as it happened, Scholastic came on the scene then, and the publishing the main publisher of Scholastic, Lynette Evans, approached me and said, you know, if I had any stories, she'd love to look at publishing them. And I said, well, I'm actually just working on the story with another artist, and away that went, and it actually went through Scholastic, and then I thought I'd go that way for that book. And it was an awesome, fun, collaborative process. So now, as far as artists go, now that I've gone to a publishing house, I have can't choose the artist directly on my own, but it's just been awesome how they've involved me in selecting the artist and giving me a chance to have a say as to who I'd imagine might publish or illustrate a particular book. So generally, the publishing industry will just line up an illustrator with a writer, and you don't really have any say. So I've been very fortunate with that. And my next art book has actually been illustrated by a lady called Carla Martel, which is... I hope I can say that. I don't see there's any reason why I shouldn't be able to say that. Then that's scheduled for next year, and that's really exciting too. Nice to meet all these creative people and work alongside them.
Wonderful. So turning up at the markets is, well, that's how I met you, I think. It was at the market on Waiheke.
Right. It's been part of the process. You know, if you're self-published, as I have been for the first 18 years, I've had two books now published by internationals all. And a lot more international publishers overseas, fortunately, because you know, the books have been published in 16 countries now. All been part of the process to continually market and promote your work, and just to meet the readers and connect with your audience and just have so much fun. Been good.
And you've worked both independently, as you mentioned, and with publishers. And what have you learned about getting your books into the world?
Well, so much, I suppose. I guess it's a 20-year career now. And, you know, you've got to be really determined. You've got to love what you do. I think there's no doubt about that. You have to really... it depends. If you're going to self-publish, there's an awful lot to learn. And, again, the landscape of self-publishing has changed so much, even in the last 5 years now, with, you know, Kindle publishing and all these things that you can actually upload your work and print on demand, and that none of that existed when I started. So it's been a real journey, I suppose, about And then I've had the benefits of working with other publishers and seeing how that works. So, I mean, it's just too, it's just so much information. I don't really know where to start with that. Just you just got to be determined. Look at your opportunities. Decide if you want to do it all yourself. If you want to try and reach publishers to take care of all the grunt work for you, and you just do the writing or the illustrating if you're an artist, and not worry about all the marketing and stuff. But the truth is, Rich, I mean, the world's just changing so fast, right? And I've got no idea what the future of children's picture books really looks like with the advent of AI and the amazing developments that have been seen there.
And how do you connect with young readers? Because you put a lot of work into that.
I did in the early days. I did a lot of school visits. So I went to schools. I did readings at libraries and performances and events. You know, sort of book events and reading events, storylines events, tours, stuff like that. These days, I don't do that quite so much. I had a tour last year when I came back from being overseas for a couple of years, and that was really fun, just down the South Island where I'm at now, down the bottom of the South. So, but I'd say also, again, connecting with the audience. Like, I still do a market stall in Queenstown most weekends, and it's a really nice environment to meet people, kids, adults, feedback, get to share new ideas, hear their stories, and yeah, that really keeps me well in touch. And of course, then I've got a nicer website, so a lot of people do pay visits to that and send me messages and ask me questions or share some of the joy or the pleasures that they've had in sharing their books throughout their family. So yeah, there's all sorts of avenues, I guess, still.
And you won the Children's Choice at the New Zealand Book Awards. How that must have been quite huge, and did that recognition affect your work at all?
It was a really important moment, actually. Yeah, and really nice. I mean, that's the award that you love to win. They don't have it in the awards anymore, which I think is a real shame. Yeah, the books, the Kiwis, the kids in schools around New Zealand primarily get to vote back in those days on their favourite book of the year, and Baba won that in 2011. And that was really important because while we were independently published, and I was trying to get our book into the likes of Wit Calls and stuff, and they're big organisations that have a lot of stuff going on, and if you've got one kind of successful book, it's a lot for them to look at, to set up a whole new account and rah rah. But when it won the Children's Choice Award, they kind of had to take it, which was great. And then that opened up the wheels of some extra publicity and that. Fortunately, I mean, a book's only as good, no matter how flash or nicely done it is or whatever awards it is, it's only as good as the enduring nature of its content, right? And fortunately, Baba's humour seems fairly universal, and even today maybe rings even more true, and its lessons around information and not believing everything you hear, perhaps, in life, and critical thinking and paying attention, all that sort of stuff, just done in a really funny way. But yeah, the award brought that to light and gave us a real break, and it was also helpful overseas when going to book fairs and stuff over in Frankfurt and Italy and stuff, that to be able to say that your book had won that award in New Zealand just gave you something to talk about, and it really helped there as well, I think.
And does it have a halo effect on your other pieces?
That's an interesting question. I think not as much as I might have imagined. I think certainly for the sequel, I Love Lemonade, and then the third one, Bedtime Blastoff. But Bedtime Blastoff was published as a 10-year celebration, really, of those first two books. And I felt that would just, given the success of Bar Bar and Lemonade in New Zealand, I think, you know, at that stage I'd done close to 100,000 copies in New Zealand. And I think I thought that Bedtime would be just instantly recognisable, but no, the world is so full of information. Just to try and let people know about the new books, new titles, you have to be in the public eye, I guess, all the time. And maybe that's where a bigger publisher can be helpful, because they've got the clout and the avenues to really market and advertise. So doing that myself again, I mean, it's still been greeted really well, and it's been really fun. But as far as it has a halo effect over the titles, I mean, who knows, right? I guess it was important, and I'm just grateful that happened for us.
Definitely. And at the best, sort of children's books they're not just entertainment. They can potentially carry a much deeper meaning. Do you see your stories as having philosophical threads? And I know we touched on that earlier, but
Yeah, I think even Barbara and its cheeky irreverence, you know, there is a strong message in there about critical thinking and about paying attention in life. I mean, particularly now with just this influx of information, disinformation, misinformation, you know, and I mean, that comes from all angles, you know. It doesn't come from conspiracists alone. It comes from governments or whatever, you know. So you've really got to pay attention in life. And I think that story does touch upon that ultimately, that Barbara is the classic trickster, you know, as Maori was and a lot of the Maori myths and stuff, you know. And that creates that kind of... I have had people tell me, kids tell me that are now older, that maybe some are even having their own kids, believe it or not, you know, that they're kind of like, you know, going, that they learned a lesson there about, you know, about that, to sort of, you know, just watch out what the turkey's trying to sell you, you know, or sorry, what the sheep's trying to tell you, don't be a turkey and all that sort of stuff. So, and then the other books, obviously, much more so, Because You're You, Two Little Bugs, which is all about emotions and feelings and seeing the world from different perspectives. And then of course, The Cork Stories and The Boy in the Cherry Tree. So, yes, and I would say a lot of that comes from just a genuine curiosity to know myself better, to explore these deeper threads of being human, and then to try and write them in ways that are accessible to all ages, and maybe, hopefully, to some small degree, seed some positive thought patterns or ideas into younger children's minds about sort of be it individuality or compassion or kindness or whatever it is. So yes, definitely, I definitely write for that, and that's even more prevalent in the work that I do in my poetry and stuff. But as far as the kids' books, there's a bit of that in there as well.
Two Little Bugs has always really resonated with me, and I know we've spoke about this before, but I think the message in there is so beautiful, and the object that the book has become is a beautiful thing. It's really well crafted.
Yeah, thank you for that. And of course, Ryan won the top award for New Zealand for book design when that came out, and it was a real highlight, because we were there just thinking, oh, it's cute having a kids' picture book in the top finalist one amongst all the flash cookbooks and stuff. And it actually won the grand prize, and she did such a lovely job of creating that, you know, making the design of the book with all its die cuts and holes is so integral to the storytelling, which is another thing. I think picture books, a great picture book, it's a good picture book apart from a great one, is how the artist interprets the narrative and how it adds layers and much more depth and potentially an entire different storyline to read between the lines, and yeah, she did a beautiful job with that. So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, and for aspiring authors who's with half finished sort of manuscripts and listening, and young people who want to sort of move into this space, what sort of words of advice would you offer them?
Oh man, I mean, again, the world's changing so fast. What was true for me 20 years ago, or even 5 years ago, is just, you know, it's just not what it is. I mean, I guess I'd go from a more sort of broader philosophical sort of space, is that, you know, I like to think that my writing, there's a place to resonate with people outside of my, you know, people in general, to resonate with them in the sense of the messages I like to convey, or the humour or whatever it is. But really, I would say write because you love writing. I mean, that's it. You know, I mean, there's such a temptation now, and you see it all over the internet, people sort of going, oh, just get AI to write your stories and publish them. But, you know, you deny yourself the deeply sentient work of understanding yourself and the world around you, which is what I've come to conclude is what my writing really is all about. It's lovely that it's found an audience, that I've managed to make a living out of it, but really it's been a deep exploration of trying to make sense of certain things. And again, sure, these are picture books with some sort of deeper arcs, but I've also written a lot of songs and a lot of poetry, and working on some more complex stories now for sort of adults, you know. So, but it's really that, I'd say, follow, if you're passionate about it, enjoy it, play with it, write for yourself, and then if you feel you have something that you wish to share with the world, then you set about that and try to figure out the best way forward with that, and whether that's independent publishing, Kindle, all that sort of stuff, or you know, or whether you try and approach publishers and get your manuscripts read and submit them, it all come down to personal choice at that stage as to how you want your life to look.
And we touched on this briefly, but what do you think makes like a brilliant children's book?
Well, I guess, yeah, it's all about the content, I suppose. I do love great production too, of course, which makes can really add a real level of deeper sort of enjoyability to reading stories. But it's just, I think it's the marriage between the pictures and the words. Mm. So if you've got a narrative that really, really works, then you need to find someone that's going to convey that storyline in a really interesting way. I mean, you'll notice the illustrations for Because You are so different to the to the Baba books, because Baba is very quirky, irreverent, short, punchy, so it's all character driven, and it doesn't need any backgrounds at all, other than a little pile of Smarty tablets, right? You know, so that's all that book demanded. You know, whereas Because You is full of imagination, this little mouse dreaming up worlds of possibility, riding snails, flying through space, you know, underwater diving, whatever it might be. And it requires a much more finer sort of art form, so to depict all that. So I think, yeah, a great picture book is a concise narrative that's brought to the essence of whatever it is you're trying to communicate, you know, a strong little character arc in a short few pages, and hopefully just an illustration style that just really brings, adds another element, another depth to it. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Is it the illustration style for the new book is more akin to the approach you took with The Silliest Dream?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, yeah, very, very much so, yeah. I mean, Ingrid did a beautiful job with that book too. Such a lovely piece of art, that book. And, yeah, that was obviously some years back now as well. But, yeah, that's the new look of that. And that kind of required that as well, didn't it? Because that book was, you know, touching on grief and the imagination of a child again. Actually, I haven't thought about that, actually. So, yeah, sort of revisited, but two, one's sort of a story dealing with grief, another one's story about love and imagination. Mm. I guess love's in the grief story as well.
So what are you working on next?
Well, I've just completed a little poem. Well, it's not really a little poem. It's 43 stanzas.
Wow.
It's called The Bogman Prince and the Butterfly Queen, and it's been my favourite thing I've ever worked on.
Wow.
I don't know quite how to describe it. It's a mythological, archetypal fairy tale about masculinity and femininity and sort of what it is to work in the, I guess, all these cliched terms, but the toxic mix, masculine, and then the averted feminine, the one that's sort of running away, is afraid of being possessed and all that sort of stuff. And I've just had so much fun with that. This has been my favourite thing. And I've got to decide how to publish that now, though, because certainly it's not going to be picked up by a children's book publisher, and I might just do that all myself.
Yeah.
I could recite it for the first few phrases for you,
yes,
if you like.
We don't have long, but yes.
Okay, well, we've got a few moments. I'll do the first couple of things. So it starts off, it goes, it's got a real sort of tribal rhythm to it. It starts out down in the marshes, damp and cold, where the moss grows thick and the rocks grow old. The Bogman Prince, if you know what I mean, has fallen in love with the Butterfly Queen. The Butterfly Queen lives high in a glade, far from the rivers where the bogmen wade. Hers is a beauty like you never have seen. Tell you what I know about the Butterfly Queen. And buttermilk skin offshine, eyes green gold, red hair flowing where her wings unfold, a voice as gentle as a bubbling stream, none seem fairer than the Butterfly Queen. So that's how it starts.
Beautiful.
Missed the second stanza, so never mind. But so it's a very, very deep little journey, and for me, it's been absolute exploration of my own internal dialogue, you know. And I guess we're using sort of like duality, masculine and feminine, to sort of understand, you know, deeper arcs of what it is to be conscious and human, and what love is, and what greed is, and aversion is, and all this. And yeah, it's been a 10, 12 years in the making, that story, I suppose.
Wonderful.
And it's finished now, and now I've got the slightly painful process of accepting that I can't keep writing and reworking it. It is done, and now it's time to actually sort of put it out there and see if anyone would like to read it.
Wonderful. And quickly before we go, where can people find your work?
Just on my website, I suppose. I guess a lot of the books are available in bookstores, but there's my website, so it's just Mark Somerset. It's MarkSomerset.com. So, yeah, I've got a little website there, a bit of poetry's up there, and a few musings and all the books in the last little bookstore. So, yeah.
Definitely worth checking out.
You can find me there and contact me on that page.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure. I'll catch up with you soon again.
Hey, great to talk with you, Rich.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.